Good morning, afternoon, or evening, wherever you happen to be in the world. And thank you for tuning in to Rack Addicts After Hours, a music and technology podcast. Episode 70, the big 7-0. My name is Ben, the first voice you're listening to today, and I'm joined by my wondrous colleague. It's Pete. Hello, how are you doing?
Not too bad. Not too bad at all, thank you.
All the better to turn over in my car and see you there. It's incredible. We've moved back to... What would this be? This would be...
Semi-normality.
Yeah. Lockdown podcast solution version 2. Zoom being sort of version 1.5. And then we had sort of outdoor picnics, which are version 3 maybe. But it's good. We're watching the river go by. There's some people in kayaks. There's fancy ducks. And always the ever-present risk of being egged. Do you remember what episode that was?
No. Well, that was... got to be around, I'd say, October time last year, was it? October?
Yeah, it was definitely around that kind of time, yeah. Trawl back through the archives. I think, looking at the front left of your car, is there a bit of egg on it? there's definitely egg on mine still.
There's definitely eggshell. When you lift the bonnet, when I have the occasions to lift the bonnet up and do things like put some more oil or more coolant in or screen wash or something like that, there's remnants of eggshell in, you know, the sort of gully, the drain gullies. I don't know what you call them, where the leaves normally gather.
Yeah, I've definitely got some twigs in mine, but yeah, there's a bit of egg residue on my window. Anyway, good memories from this particular spot, but it's great to be here and in the light for once. We do these in the evening. Anyway, weekly update time. If I may begin, Pete, I've had quite an exciting day. I was stressing about it for a week because I borrowed a lot of Behringer Modular. We're talking $2,000 of Behringer Modular. Just took it home and had to learn the stuff for some video shoots today. But it went all right. So now I can report on a bit of experience with the Behringer Modular stuff.
Go on. Give me the lowdown. Okay, like that, was it?
Some of it is quite compelling. So the Roland flavoured, there's that one that is the VCO, VCF, VCA combo.
Yeah.
For practically no money. While I'm speaking, I'm just going to quickly Google how much it costs because that's one I actually enjoyed. As we know, Behringer, in their infinite laziness when they're cloning these vintage designs, they'll always go for the path of least resistance, find a schematic, bodge the power, make a panel and call it a day. So of course they do follow the way the vintage ones work. So we're talking the S and V trigs are still a thing, which is miserable. How hard would that have been to change, really? Talking to Nigel and also Akira Sheilas, who appeared on the podcast a while ago, there's a volume drop, a noticeable volume drop, like the normal modular level is really loud, bigger than line level, and it can pose problems sometimes if you're trying to interface into the real world. The Behringer stuff is really quiet. It seems like it's just running at line level, maybe. It's really odd. I don't know. The V-trig and S-trig thing did annoy me quite a bit, because the envelope generator, let's have a look at that. It's just an ADSR, it's super cheap. And let me quickly just search these things because my multitasking isn't happening today. Of course, I'm searching it on a certain website, which we know very well, which is next to impossible to actually search for things on. What a disaster this is turning out to be. Just won a price. Okay, I don't care anymore. So, the envelope generator of the Moog flavored stuff. It has an output and an S trigger in. So unless you have an Arturia key step or something else that has the option in a settings program to set the output to be an S trig, you're going to have to make a custom cable or use up an attenuverter just to trigger the thing. And for people who are jumping into modular for the first time, looking at all this cheap accessible stuff, they might not know. They might not have the extra bits to make it work. And it's just stupid. And it's just a polarity thing. They could have easily swapped some bits on a PCB and it would have been fine and compatible. But they didn't bother.
Yeah, so maybe they just, consider it to be a closed system. So you either have the Moog system or you have the Roland system, and that's as far as it goes. So you use the sequencer they're selling. The Moog one's got the step sequencer.
It does. They do have the interface module, which helps you convert S and V trigs, but it's massive.
Is there anything sequency with the Roland?
Yes, there's the vertical 8-step thing, which hasn't arrived yet, so I haven't played with it. But at the moment, it seems that the Roland stuff is going to be much more compelling and of course, dangerously priced. I am going to look up that price. It's going to annoy me. To the Intermatron. Okay, Gear for Music have this particular module at $89.99 for almost a full synth voice. What's your radio doing?
Don't know.
Oh, no, you've broken it.
There we go. Totally switched off now.
Sabotage. Yeah, $89.99 for, you know, oscillator, filter, amplifier. That's a deal. And it feels good. Like, the octave switches feel fine. They don't feel the best in the world. They're not the kind of stuff you'd find on modern Moog bits, but I wouldn't complain for that much money.
Yeah, I mean, it is a quite good value proposition. I'm not really going to be getting it myself, to be honest.
I was thinking about it. I'm now not thinking about it, really.
Well, you've most probably satisfied your curiosity with being able
exactly.
to borrow everything.
I have. So that was cool. Yeah, it is what it is. It's kind of what we expected, I think.
Did you do the video shoot?
Yes, we did. Went quite well.
Okay, well, at least that's all done.
Yeah, although there will be a round 2 and 3, probably, to get more videos. But that'll be cool. Another thing that has happened, this kind of tacks on to my previous rantings about the world of espresso. There are tools available to the espresso enthusiast, most of the time at exorbitant prices, because it's one of those things. Tools for distributing the ground coffee in the portafilter, or the basket, however you want to call it. These are often little spinny things that kind of level the surface. But the one that is easiest to use, or bodge yourself, would be the WDT tool. I can't remember what it stands for. Either way, you can do this with just a straightened out paperclip. You just kind of stir it up so the grounds are nice and even, then you tamp. That's not really relevant, to be honest, but what's been interesting is I've been trying to make my own. So I've sort of bought giant paperclips and straightened them out and put little twirls in the end. I started out sticking them in a wine cork, so you have a little handle and use it to stir. But what I then did is I went on eBay and bought some exotic wood pen blanks. But these were sort of seconds, so about, I think it was a 10 quid box of about 20 or more pen blanks of things like, I think we've got walnut, there might be some padauk, there's definitely mahogany in there, I think there's some ash and some other fancy looking things. But just to make a little wooden handle for these little 3 paperclip things. If you Google WDT tool, you'll probably have a better handle on the kind of shape of thing I'm talking about. But all I did is I just got a small block of wood, I sanded it a little bit, I put some, drilled some bits in the end, stuck some things in, put some linseed oil on it, and it looks really nice. And I made something with my own fleshy hands, and it was so satisfying.
Yeah, I can see that.
Brilliant. So I then obviously went in too deep, and now I've ordered, and has subsequently arrived, some 1 millimeter medical grade stainless steel wire, because the paper clips are, they must be zinc coated or something, some other kind of, or chrome plated or something, and as you bend them that all falls off, and obviously we don't want that in our espresso, that's not going to work. So I have that wire, and I have 3 A5 sheets of, this is 0.5 mil copper, aluminium and brass, to kind of layer up with the woods to make a nice little handle. Similar to how knife makers would put those little fillets in the handle. I'm very excited. It's going to be fun. Little DIY project. Why not?
You have to take some pictures and post them.
Absolutely will. I'm quite excited. I just need to get a hacksaw, pilfer one from my dad when I go up there later. But yeah, that's been my week. It's been crafty and slightly stressful, but it's been good. What have you been up to, my colleague?
Well, unfortunately, I've become victim to, or I've now been held hostage to, a really annoying smartphone game. You know, the sort of thing that really inane.
Oh, no.
Doesn't have any kind of purpose.
What's got you, Pete?
So this particular game's called Bubble Pop.
Oh,
and it's
dear.
Quite literally just pinging coloured bubbles around and popping them. You know, the sort of game, the sort of thing that has absolutely no purpose and never ends. And it's just an excuse for the vendors of the software to try and present you with as much advertising as possible.
Yeah, totally.
But for some reason, You just can't stop playing this thing. I mean, literally, I've wasted copious hours on this thing. And I just can't. And it's not like there's no end game. There's no achievement. It's just all your, you know, it's apart from the it's trying to encourage you to spend money, which.
To get rid of the ads or microtransactions.
Yeah,
or
exactly.
Something.
And as I say, present you with very inappropriate advertising that has no relevance whatsoever. Just sort of.
Sometimes they're quite entertainingly terrible, the adverts.
Yeah, to a degree. There was one for ladies' attire that was completely, I was thinking, why? Surely these things siphon so much information from us these days, you know, literally your personal tracking device.
Yeah, you're just screaming at this game, go, please track me harder. You're not doing it properly.
You would have thought they had a better grip on the demographic that I came from and potentially the sort of things I might be interested in. The internet seems to be able to deal with that when you're using a normal
most of the time. You get those horribly specific ones where you think, I had a conversation about that yesterday. It's got me.
Well, it's just invariably it's cookies, really, isn't it? Just tracking cookies definitely. To sort of go across. But yes, so yeah, I've been completely absorbed with this thing and just nothing else has been achieved other than I've popped some bubbles.
Well, dear listeners, if you never hear from Pete again, you know what's got him. It's the bubble popping game. He met his end, popping bubbles.
The worst of it is that. It will actually, when I'm not playing it, it throws up messages on the actual phone saying, come and pop some bubbles. So it's not like a game that you go, oh, I think I'll have it. So it actually entices you back.
Oh, no, they've constantly. Got you by the dopamine.
Yeah, it's got all, it ticks all those boxes. Yeah.
as your entire week's been the bubble popping game.
Literally.
Oh, no. Disaster. Well, I think we better gloss over that one. Move on. To actually quite a juicy news week. Ooh, there's some stuff. Shall we save the most interesting for last and start with the boring ones?
Yep, far away.
So, I say boring. It means we can kind of slag it off a little bit. IK Multimedia, manufacturers of very middling synthesizers and drum machines and lots of software. An update for the Uno range. We've got the Uno Synth Pro and Pro Desktop. What did you think of the original Uno synth, Pete?
I didn't think of it at all, to be, if I could help it.
You tried to forget that it ever existed. Yeah, it's one of those. If you haven't met it before, small, very plasticky, and has one of those. It's a flat panel with a capacitive touch system and printed buttons. It's kind of okay, I suppose. It's got, I think, two oscillators and a similar control scheme to things like the Waldorf Blofeld, where you have a few rows of options and then four encoders that you can use to adjust it, and you click on a different row and you'll adjust those parameters, you know, to save money on actual parts. It is all analog, and I think the original had a delay in it, but yeah, just there was nothing remotely interesting about it apart from the fact that you could run it on a couple of batteries and it was portable. But yeah, updates. The Pro Desktop, I believe, is the same form factor, and the Synth Pro is actually in a proper chassis, full-size keys, metal, apparently.
But the control surface is identical.
It control just surface is still, you know, flat and
it's
capacitive.
It's just in a much larger case.
Yeah, so yeah,
a lot more money.
Yeah, a lot more money. So we've got just more of the things, really. It's still monophonic. We've just got more oscillators with their, which is quite a nice thing. You've got the sort of the variable waveform instead of the selecting one, which is quite nice. You know, there's more filter options. You've got more sequencer stuff, more effects, more presets, more connections, more and more. But you're talking 400 euros for the Pro Desktop and 650 for the metal, the big boy, the Pro.
Yeah, that's a lot of lot of dollars and euros.
They'll have to have changed a lot to actually, I think, impress me. It will have to be a completely different synth to impress me.
I don't think it is.
Yeah, I'm not excited. Try again, IK. Do something interesting rather than just a normal, boring.
I mean, I only really think of their little gadgets for interfacing with iPads and things like that type of thing.
And some of them are kind of useful when they don't break 4 minutes after looking at them. Let's go for another one that's kind of small, and I might have mentioned it before. So, Pete, chop this one out if I did mention it before. I can't remember. Our friends at Modal from Bristol have re-released the Sculpt. This is now called the Sculpt Synth SE. Same kind of form factor. This is now a white and black. So that's another capacitive touch keyboard, which everybody knows and hates. This is a much more interesting, tiny, cheap, digital-ish synth for me personally. Another battery-powerable one. This is a four-voice poly VA synth. Has full-size MIDI and a little bit more connectable and stuff. They've fixed the text. So on the original sculpts, you had to kind of tilt your head at an angle if you wanted to read what any of the controls did, because they're, oh, we're going to be edgy. We're going to print this legend on the diagonal. This time it's straight, so you can actually read the thing. But now they've added MPE, which is really cool. And, I mean, it's digital, so I mean, why not? But that's a really affordable way to get an MPE device. Obviously, you won't have MPE control, but it will respond to it. So that is super sweet if you happen to have... Although, if you've got an MPE controller, you've probably got the money for something else nicer.
Yeah.
Oh, well. They sound kind of cool, and they are portable. They do feel a little bit cheap, so... But, yeah, I don't really have anything especially against that particular chappy there. Right, what's next? This one is something that confused me, rather. You know VC VRack, Pete? Do you know VC VRack?
No, I'm not familiar.
Ah, a free and open source virtual moduler, which is pretty cool. It's got some real modules in it, so it's got a lot of stuff from Bifaco, Mutable Instruments, bits and pieces, and of course open source, so loads of people are making their own modules for it, and some are offering paid modules. It's really cool. It's grown quite quickly. It's got a good community around it. If you want virtual modular, that's a brilliant, brilliant choice. Somebody's made a hardware control surface for it, which...
Is that missing the point?
Well, yeah, that's what I thought. Like, it's going to be... I don't think it's released or available necessarily because they're still making it, but whatever it is, it's going to be quite expensive, and it's got patch points that will work virtually, and you'd probably have to program it and map it, and it would be quicker to just use your mouse and click a patch cable in the software.
Yeah. I mean, what when you say quite expensive, did you say?
Well, it's got to be, because it's one person making the thing, and it's going to be tiny production runs if they actually make it available, and just get a modular.
Exactly what I was going to say. Just get some real modular if you want.
Or just stick to the virtual
thing. Yeah, stick to the software.
Yeah, because you can use a regular MIDI controller if you want physical control of some of the knobs in there for performance.
Yeah.
And you can integrate it into a DAW quite easily. I mean, if it's just a personal project, I mean, that's kind of cool, I guess, but... Anyway, let's move on.
Well, it's like
that
weird crossover you get because, you know, you, in the past you've had modules that were just the embodiment of plugins, but they were put into hardware modules.
Yes.
But they're digital. Like the audio damage stuff.
Yeah. The audio damage stuff was pretty cool. It's a bit of a shame they stopped.
Yeah, it is a shame they stopped.
Oh, well. Oh, no, there was one. They had a really good compressor, I think, that I was kind of had my eye on, but then they disappeared. Oh, well. We have... two more little nuggets before we get into the big, juicy one of the evening. Erica Synths appear again. They've got another module in the Black Series, which is another BBD. I mean, they've had and probably still have quite a few different delay options. This one just happens to have a couple of different parallel delay lines, a longer one and a shorter one. You can blend between the two, which is quite nice. You know, we spoke about this before. It's Erica Synths. It'll be good. It's got a filter. It's got all the CV you'd want. Lovely stuff. €260. Jobs are good and probably. So yeah, that's just called the Black BBD. Now, a little tiny nugget. You know Muff Wiggler?
Yep.
It's not anymore.
Really?
It's Mod Wiggler now.
What happened?
They changed the name, which has been a point of contention for ages because people... There's always been a thread saying, oh, are you offended by this name? People go, not really. And then they changed the name.
I mean, they've been going for, what, 10 years or so? Was that a bit excessive? I mean, it's
no, I wouldn't be surprised if it was longer.
Really?
Yeah, it's been around ages. So
they've gone all PC or something.
Potentially, it's a 2-year anniversary of Mike McGrath's death. Apparently, sort of around about now, and it's because also Gear Sluts isn't Gear Sluts anymore. That's a very good question. What did they change their name to? Because Gear Sluts is no more. I mean, to be fair, you do feel a little bit weird chucking it into polite conversation, going, oh, yeah, on Muff Wiggler. Excuse me, what?
Yeah.
But it's kind of funny, and people have a laugh, don't you?
It's not extremely offensive. I mean, it depends what your particular train of thought is.
It's not like the Big Muff guitar pedal is going to change. That's an icon.
What about all the other ones? The swollen pickle. And yeah. Who makes those?
And the camel toe. That's way huge.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, yeah, way huge camel toe. Like,
every single one of their pedals is a sort of maximum yeah. form of innuendo.
Exactly. And yeah, so Gear Sluts is now Gear Space.
Maybe they've been having to... Maybe they're trying to commercialise, because a lot of
potentially
sponsors won't touch it. If you've got I know that a certain YouTuber that I follow
yeah.
had a dubious name for his channel, and it just recently changed the YouTube channel completely to something more acceptable. And he yeah. actually did a video to explain, because he wanted to partner with a lot more sponsors and that type of thing. Mm. And he was prevented by the previous name of his channel.
Yeah, I mean, YouTube's been pretty hard on that kind of PC line recently as well. Like, pulling ads from even videos that just happen to have a lot of swearing in it. They say, oh no, this isn't advertiser-friendly content. Can't have this. No.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a minefield for them.
I'm sure they've got their reasons.
I'm sure they do. And money will probably be all of them.
Yes. everything always falls back to money.
Always does. So there are some small nuggets. Pete, do you want to deliver the juicy one? This is quite exciting, guys.
So, well, when did you find out about it? Or how? What was the means of...
It was just absolutely, well, not left field, because it appeared exactly where I would expect such a thing to appear, but without warning, there was a post on the ModCaf thing. Anthony's just linked an article. Here we go. Suddenly, take it away.
Have you watched the video?
Yes, I have. I have okay. watched the video.
Yeah, I suddenly caught it.
We're keeping you in the dark. We're not going to tell you what we're actually talking about yet.
Again, a YouTube channel from a gentleman. The channel's called Pure Ambient Drones.
Oh, yeah.
And he hasn't got a massive following, but he's got a massive synth collection. Mm. And it was just on there, and he presented the video. So, did it come out yesterday? Or was it
a bit before? Just so we can keep our listeners guessing.
Yes.
Just for a little bit longer. Why not? Let's keep that suspense. Let's find out. When was this announced?
It's only in the last couple of days or so.
I don't know.
Anyway.
Wait, let me find the date on the YouTube video. That'll do.
So the nub of the news article is that Focusrite have acquired Sequential.
3 days ago. Yeah. Yeah,
so I did watch the video from Dave Smith explaining his rationale on it, and he seems quite pleased about it.
Yeah, he seemed pretty happy.
So I'm not too or particularly perturbed by this at all.
Yeah, that was the theme in the ModCaf Facebook group threads. We were all going, yeah, that's all right. I mean, you and I both really like the Summit. The Peak's been cool. Novation's products are always really solid. Focusrite stuff is really solid, even if it might not be the most exciting option. Adam is now under the umbrella too. Yeah, solid move.
It was explained on the video that Sequential is going to carry on as an independent mm-hmm. company.
Yeah.
But I would imagine distribution is now going to go through Focusrite, as it does with Novation and Adam
yeah.
Audio.
And the hope here is that at last we might be able to get Sequential stuff repaired and not have to go digging around in their guts ourselves.
Yes. So do you think they'll have a designated repair centre in the UK, which we could...
Probably, if there is a main hub for Focusrite-related distribution, I imagine they'd have one there.
Well, as long as they keep spares, it should work. If they have to request spares every time they have something in for repair, then it's
like
just going to...
Like we kind of do.
Yeah, it's just going to delay the process even further, because it takes forever to get stuff fixed.
It shouldn't be our problem, really. So I hope they fix that. That'll be really nice.
The repair actions are pretty straightforward, because it's generally just board swaps.
And yeah.
There's not a lot of boards in those things.
We still shouldn't be doing it.
Yeah. I know, but it's the most practical and easiest solution.
Yeah, especially if you have to get it across the pond. That would be a nightmare.
I've even replaced keys.
Yep, I've done keys, I've done voice cards, I've done multiple mainboard swaps, and... Yeah, I think that's all we can really do.
Massive firmware updates.
Oh, so many firmware updates.
I think we've done just about everything that you could possibly do to a Dave Smith instrument.
Without breaking out the soldering iron, at least, yeah.
Well, looking at the book, I don't think you could repair any of those that easily. There's a lot of surface mount. So I'm not sure if they even attempt. I know that they have all the boards back to their factory, but whether they attempt to fix them or not, I mean, they're in the best position to do that.
Yeah.
Yes, as you say, as long as we don't have to do it anymore. But I'm not at all perturbed, as I said earlier, by this.
No, I don't. And of course, Sequential operating on their own for all intents and purposes, I don't really see any changes coming at all. What kind of... I can't really see any pressure coming from sort of Focusrite as a head saying, oh, maybe try and fill this product category or develop something a bit budget friendly. What do you reckon?
I'm not sure. I don't know if they'll actually change the product line, but I think it will be more around distribution and maybe marketing.
Yeah,
that type of thing. It without knowing the ins and outs of the agreement they formed, we don't know quite where it lies. I mean, Dave's just said he's going to be left alone to design synths, which is what he does.
Yeah, and as a few people have pointed out, he's getting on a bit, and I suppose he's just going to think it's going to be nice to hopefully have the company in the safe hands of a team that he kind of trusts and gets on with as well.
Yeah, I mean, you really wouldn't want to be trying to run a corporation and design synths at the same time.
Of course.
It'd be such a distraction.
Yeah.
I mean, other firms they've remained independent. They sort of Moog is owned by the employees now, isn't it?
Yeah, they print it on all their boxes. Employee owned in Asheville. That kind of stuff.
But what do you think the motivation by Focusrite is to make all these purchases, just to grow by acquisition?
Difficult to think if they have any kind of evil scheme in the works. Not necessarily evil, of course.
So obviously you're seen as a desirable brand to have within their fold, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, Focusrite themselves have a decent amount of, sort of, I suppose, pedigree is kind of the word, in the studio world with consoles and things that they have done in the past. Their Red series of products is really good and I think highly regarded, if not in the spotlight so much. I think Sequential is that big name with history that they haven't really got.
It's had a strange and checkered history, Sequential. The fact that they only acquired the name back, 3 years ago or so?
Well, it wasn't even acquired back. Whoever owned it, just like, here, have it.
I mean, the whole business is quite incestuous anyway, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like a lot of these things, everyone knows everyone else anyway, certainly at that level.
Yeah. Oh, wait, it was Yamaha, wasn't it?
It was something like that.
I think Yamaha owned the name. They just sort of gave it back.
Because Dave had gone off to Korg or done quite a lot of stuff with Korg after the Sequential folded the first time round.
Yeah.
But yes, I mean, yes, as you say, he's just 70. He was, because we talked about his birthday last year, wasn't it?
So,
yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want to be sort of still at the cold face at 70.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll keep a close eye on him. See if there are any rumblings.
Yes.
There we go. A juicy chunk of synth news. You know what that means. It's time for Luke's Spacey Bit. I've really been enjoying listening to these on my bike rides. Take us away for another one, Luke.
Hello, space fans, and welcome. This week we said goodnight for the last time to a unique individual. The man who had the unenviable job of piloting the Apollo 11 command module Columbia, remaining in orbit while his colleagues Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin made the descent to the surface of the moon during the historic mission to land humans on the moon for the first time. That man's name is Michael Collins. Collins was no stranger to piloting. Before joining NASA, he flew in the US Air Force and later became a test pilot. Flying an experimental craft and putting it through a variety of new maneuvers is incredibly dangerous and requires skillful flying and meticulous attention to detail that made Collins and others like him ideal astronaut candidates. After selection, Collins would choose extravehicular activity as his specialization and became a liaison between the astronaut office and NASA contractors in all of these matters. He flew the Gemini 10 mission alongside John Young, who would later go on to land on the moon after Collins's crew with Apollo 16, and later fly the first space shuttle mission, STS-1. Gemini 10 was, like all of those early space flights, a hazardous and difficult mission filled with ambitious experiments and some of NASA's earliest EVAs. The primary task of Gemini 10 was to catch up and dock with an unmanned target craft called Agena, launched just minutes ahead of the Gemini 10 spaceship itself. This would demonstrate and provide data on the process of docking in space and was part of NASA's learning process for the docking maneuvers that Collins and other command module pilots would have to perform during the subsequent Apollo missions. In the case of Gemini 10, Collins and Young rendezvoused with two Agena craft, one from the previous Gemini 8 mission. Radiation experiments vital to the Apollo missions were also conducted that proved high-altitude radiation exposure could be managed. Bear in mind that before Gemini 10, no craft had exceeded a height of 475 kilometers above the Earth, and in achieving an orbit of 764 kilometers, Gemini 10 briefly held the record of ferrying humans farther into space than ever before. NASA rotated their astronauts through various different tasks. Only people who knew every aspect of what they could be expected to do were suitable for the novel task of going where no one had ever gone before in a craft that was being used for the first time. As such, Collins served as CAPCOMF, the capsule communicator in mission control for Apollo 8. The CAPCOM has to know everything that the astronauts on board know about the mission and was their primary radio liaison during their flight. He oversaw the flight from launch to translunar injection, the burn that would raise their orbit away from Earth and into an intersection with the Moon. It was during this time that Collins was selected as the command module pilot for the historic Apollo 11 mission. Often compared to George Harrison as the inevitably forgotten bassist of the biggest band in the world, Collins' contribution to the mission cannot be overstated. Yes, it was Armstrong that landed the Eagle lander on the Moon, and it was Aldrin who followed him down the steps to their glorious endeavour, but Collins stood sentry, holding the door open for his colleagues as they stepped into the unknown. He wrote of the event that, "This venture has been structured for three men, and I consider my third to be every bit as necessary as either of the other two." And though it's said that not since Adam has any human known such solitude, Collins reportedly bucked such poetic tendencies. Instead of ruminating on his loneliness, he ran check after check of his 117-page rendezvous compendium, rehearsing for any unforeseen difficulties in meeting with the returning lunar module, while daydreaming about the lab mice he would soon be spending quarantine with upon his return to Earth. If you don't know that story, it was thought that even though the chances of life on the Moon were very slim indeed, it would be possible for the Apollo 11 crew to bring home some unknown pathogen, and as such they spent 21 days in isolation in a renovated and environmentally sealed mobile home. In this trailer was a cage of white mice who had the unfortunate job of acting as canaries in the proverbial coal mine, showing any signs of infection if there were any signs of infection to be had. Fortunately, this was not the case, and the astronauts were returned to the public after their brief quarantine. Imagine being quarantined for 21 days, but without Netflix, honestly. After Apollo 11, Collins went on to various jobs within government. At one particular appointment, he gave a speech in which he hit upon the problem of what we now call the echo chamber, stating that he believed America's problems stemmed from the insular nature of society. To quote, "Farmers speak to farmers, students to students, business leaders to other business leaders, but this intramural talk serves mainly to mirror one's own beliefs, to reinforce existing prejudices, and to lock out opposing views." After a long and unique life, Michael Collins died on the 28th of April 2021 of cancer at the age of 90. And that concludes our segment. We'll be back next week with more space news. In the meantime, I'll hand you over to our co-hosts, brought to you via the magic of motorized vehicles and portable recorders. Stay safe. Bye-bye.
And thank you so much. Another wonderful trip into the great beyond. So, towards the end, the so far jingle-less miscellaneous multimedia recommendation stage of the Rack Addicts After Hours podcast. Peter, are you first? I think you are, because I've forgotten what mine was.
Right, as usual, YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. This one's called Modustrial Maker.
Mm-hmm.
This is a gentleman who is currently renovating an abandoned building that he purchased. Now, I haven't seen the location externally, but it looks like one of those, you know, the typical town, small town America look, where they have those sort of buildings that are like maybe two stories, bottom story is a shop, and then it goes back.
Yeah.
You know how they there's a certain configuration of building that you see quite often in lots of towns around the US.
Yeah.
And I've actually seen them in the flesh. And they all date from early 1900s, that sort of, or around that sort of, you know, period, invariably red brick, possibly, maybe some other materials. Anyway, this is that type of thing. And he has gone through the whole process of gutting the building and then sort of having a sort of loft apartment type of thing built in on the top floor. And downstairs, he's got workshops and so forth. I mean, he has been YouTubing for some time and previous to this particular project that he's working on now, and he gets involved in all sorts of strange sort of making things. He's got a very large CNC machine. I mean, he's done strange dips with electric guitars, you know, these sort of...
Oh, the swirly... That sort of thing,
sort of dipping them into paint. But, yeah, just, again, and it's not quite what we've talked about in the past about people doing things exceptionally well. And to be really honest...
The artisan thing.
Yeah, it's not that as such. I mean, he's using contractors. He does a lot of time lapses. It's just interesting to see a project being done and how it progresses.
Yeah.
I mean, this last week... They had done all the drywalling, and he was painting the walls, but he did it by spraying them all.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
So he sprayed all the walls and ceilings, and I think one room, he did the whole room in 35 minutes.
Not bad.
So it was quite quick.
The envy of every home decorator.
So he will talk about the materials he's using, choices he's making, and the reasons for that, and talks about, you know, what other people might be able to do or should do in that respect. I mean, it's very US-centric in respect to the techniques and materials.
Yeah.
I mean, some of it had... I mean, there's some analogies that you could see in the way we would do things in the UK, but building standards and regulations and that type of thing...
Yeah, it's totally
slightly different in some respects. There's analogies that you can make or things that you can recognise. But, yeah, it's quite entertaining. It's ongoing. He is rushing at the moment to, because the project's been going on for at least a year, but he's got a limited amount of time. He's staying in an Airbnb and he's got to get out by the end of May. So there's a real push at the moment. So it's coming together. It's like a lot of projects. I don't know how much of that type of thing you've done yourself, but you're forever prepping the thing and working on it. And it's at the end where things start coming together really quickly. Once you've done all the sort of... preamble stuff.
No, never attempted anything of that scale.
Also, he did have to wait for all sorts of building permits and things like that, regulations that he had to follow. So there was a lot of waiting. But now, it's kicking off. So, as I said earlier, when I go back to my YouTube, Modustrial Maker on YouTube.
Lovely stuff. Let us continue on the YouTube front. I have two for you. One is a quick 30-seconder. This is on the channel of somebody called Simon Sandness, which is S-I-M-E-N, Simon, S-A-N-D-N-E-S. And this is Toto Rosanna, but it's metric modulated. You know the drum groove, and this will freak you out, and it's good fun. The other one is on the YouTube channel called Sweebounce. I have no idea what else is on this channel. It's just one video that I found. That's S-W-E, Bounce, all one word. And it's called Robot Chair Act. So this is a comedic stage performance. Somebody has attached a regular chair to, you know, those kind of really beefy industrial robot arms that would be doing sort of moving parts about in some kind of fabrication plant, you know, those huge ones that can move really fast and look kind of dangerous, you know.
The ones that have to be fenced off and you shouldn't go near the one. Yes.
Yeah, so he's attached a chair to the business end of one of these and he's pretending he's like some kind of chair salesman. And he's obviously programmed a sequence in for this arm to follow. And so he sort of starts saying, yes, it's in a different language, but it's subtitled. It says, yes, this is our most relaxing, comfortable model. And as he's speaking, kind of sits down, relaxes in it. And then the arm gets going, kind of like shakes him off and he stands up. And then it gets quite intense and aerobatic and dangerous looking. But it's pretty funny. And yeah, a good watch. Good watch. So that will be Sweebounce, S-W-E-B-O-U-N-C-E, Robot Chair Act. And it's good fun. And that rounds us off. We've made it. Episode 70. Blimey, that's a few of Rack Addicts After Hours. Brain shut down. Words no worky. Anyway, the end of the podcast. Thank you so many Muchlingtons for listening. We hope you come back soon. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.